Hello, good evening, welcome. I am Samuel Trapp. This is Damn Radio you are listening to. And the show is International Flavor. I am coming to you live from Vilnius, country of Lithuania, right now, where I've had an eventful day. Well, quite a bit has gone on here, quite a bit I've looked at, and we're going to be going into the show. I've decided to tell you the show is about NATO's and Europe's scars, the scars that I believe are still carried here. There will be a point at the end of why I think that it's from an American's perspective, but I'm an American. I've been traveling and on my way back from Moscow. I'm in Vilnius for a day or two. And then I'll be going from here to Istanbul, and then from Istanbul back to Miami. And it'll be some good stuff. And I wanted to talk about some of the news that I have encountered and a few extremely interesting things that that were part of the events tonight. And I don't want to go too far into it without saying that here on International Flavor, you can listen to my shows live on damradio.com /live, basically every night, Chicago time, Sunday through Thursday night. For this show, unfortunately, due to my travel and due to my issues with that travel, I'm doing a pre-recorded show. This one will actually be aired on Monday evening. Coming up in Chicago time on Monday, which I believe is the 1st of September. God knows what the date is these days. I've been traveling and really haven't been keeping track of the days. So, but I believe that is going to be the case. And so you cannot call in on this show. If you do, no one is going to answer because I'm not live in the studio. I'm in an apartment in Vilnius and doing my show from here. And some of the things I wish to go into tonight. So at any rate, I wanted to get started tonight with a bit of a commentary about the boogeyman. And it's a Western created boogeyman, and that boogeyman is named Russia. I saw a lot of history, and I have a thesis that I've been working on for a little while about what we have done in the West, at least since the end of World War II. And I'm not sure that the U.S. and all the things that I learned, it really, in high school, in grade school, wherever, in the military, that I learned going through everything that I went through in education-wise. I have a jurisprudence doctorate, so I went pretty damn far. But I remember learning things about what the U.S. did and what the U.S. has done after World War II. And I never really paid that much attention to world history. And yes, they had classes on it in high school and stuff, but I'm not sure if that's as an American's perspective, they don't teach that, or most of the time, because I went to public school, you know, I wasn't in any private school, didn't get any world training. I dreamed about other places in the world and stuff like that, even when I was a kid. And my desire to travel, Lithuania counts now as my 57th state nation that I have visited. I found a Lithuanian flag today to add to my hat, which has a flag from every country that I've been to on my hat. And I wear it around sometimes, but I don't take it on trips and whatnot. I'd hate to lose it. It's more for a display item in my pickup truck. But at any rate, I got that flag today. But I've always had the desire for travel to other countries. I've been to all 50 states in the United States, and I finished that on my 50th birthday by going to Maine. And that was an interesting trip. Had some lobster on the beach. And very good. Probably the best lobster I've ever had. And it was well worth the trip. All I did was go up, spend the night, eat at an Arabic restaurant the night before, which was really cool. And then I had my lobster on the beach the next day, which happened to be my 50th birthday, and then drove home. And that was my last state I had to get to. And I'd always said I was going to do it by the time I was 50. Well, I'm going to live until I'm 100. And so I've been knocking out country since I was a young man as well. And I always try to stop in at least one or two and spend a day or two there. And that's what I'm doing in Lithuania. So at any rate, Vilnius is an interesting city. Ukrainian flags flying everywhere. Lots of history, tons of history. And as Americans, like I was saying in the beginning here, we don't get as much of a focus on history as we probably ought to. And like I said, in high school, all you get is how great the U.S. is, basically, and they don't go too in-depth into what the rest of the world's history is, because it's a pretty self-centered public education from the history perspective. Not that the other interesting parts of existence and life don't exist, because they do, but that I believe the focus is always, especially in public school, pointed toward the greatness of the United States. And the United States, great country. You know, I'm a patriot. I believe in the United States for the most part. I don't believe in our leaders. I believe we got some problems there, but, you know, that occurs. And hopefully we do a little better in the next rounds. You never know. So my thought process today is about NATO and the boogeyman, the created boogeyman. I'm going to tell you something that I believe completely. NATO was never really about defending Europe from anything. It was about control. It was about control and the U.S. desire to continue to control. And I'll tell you why I think that way on a personal level. But think about it. In World War II, who started the war? Who started World War I? How did it start? Let's talk about World War II, which Russians refer to as the Great Patriotic War, but it wasn't the Russians, it wasn't the Soviets who started the war, it was Germany. Everybody knows it. The Axis was Germany, Italy, and Japan. I remember playing a game called Axis and Allies. I always liked it, and you know, it was a pretty cool strategy game, and lots of strategic thinking that went on in that game, and I enjoyed playing it. And the Axis teams were Germany, Italy, Japan, and the Allies were Soviet Union, United Kingdom, and America. So Russia, Soviet Union, was our ally in this huge thing. And who paid the heaviest price, which a lot of people seem to forget, especially in America, who paid the heaviest price to crush Hitler? Wasn't the United States, was not Britain, although they paid as well, but Britain for sure, more than the United States did, but it was the Soviet Union. They lost 26, maybe 27 million people dead. The U.S. lost about 600,000, if I recall my numbers correctly, and I truly do not know and didn't look up how many they lost in England or United Kingdom, Britain. But entire cities were flattened there and in Russia. Russia, you know, without the Red Army's sacrifice at Stalingrad, Kursk, and Berlin, I'll tell you this, the Eastern European countries, if not Russia itself, would be speaking German right now. They wouldn't be speaking Lithuanian. They wouldn't have the division. You could say a lot of bad things about Russia if you wish. I don't care. You know, that's everybody can have their own opinion on this. But from my own personal perspective, I think Russia saved Europe, you know, with the U.S. and with the allies working. French certainly had a little bit to do with it. But it was mainly U.S., Britain, Russia, Soviet Union, successors too, right? But everybody always wants to turn Russia into the bad guy. And that's what happened immediately after. Answer me this question. When NATO was formed in 1949, it was formed 4 years after the war ended in 1945, after they defeated. And think about this. We had Churchill's Iron Curtain speech in 1946, already talking about the evils of Russia, the Truman Doctrine in 1947, and the Marshall Plan in 1948, 1949, NATO. Okay, and Stalin was, our ally, old Uncle Joe. We were trading lend-leased things. We were trading aircraft in Alaska. That's part of the reason why Putin went to visit and commemorate that when he did meet with Trump, first Russian president, first Russian leader of any kind in any generation to go to Alaska. They'd never been there. So the Axis was there. Russia, Soviet Union, could not have, didn't have the resources, didn't have the will, didn't have the ability to march on Western Europe at that time. So why did we create NATO? The Soviets were shattered as well and exhausted since 1939. They'd been in war with Germany. So the Soviets were pretty shattered. They wanted buffer states, and they got them, Poland, Hungary, Czechoslovakia, not to conquer the world, and, you know, Baltics too, for that matter. They weren't trying to conquer the world. They were trying to basically prevent another German invasion. Or end it, or make sure it didn't happen again. But nobody was planning on that. So yet in record time, the whole story was flipped. You know, one day, Stalin was our friend, our ally. The next, he was a Cold War monster. he may have been a monster anyway for other reasons, but mostly to his own people. I don't think he had any designs to take over the world. You know, I have a pretty good understanding of what was going on after World War II, and it wasn't about Russia taking over the world. They weren't trying. They didn't go anywhere. Who else did they capture, take over after World War II? Nobody. So, but NATO, that's because NATO was not about saving Europe from anything. It was about locking Europe into and under American and somewhat British control through money, bases, weapons. They were all down, and the Americans took advantage. So they were selling the American people a story about a Russian bear ready to take over the world. That's what was happening. That's why NATO came around. And that story never died. To this day, Russia has always been the monster under the bed. Didn't matter if it was Stalin, Andropov, Yeltsin, Putin, heck, Gorbachev. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall. The story never changed. Story never changed at all. And here's the truth. We built that boogeyman. We built the boogeyman of Russia after 1945, and it continues to this day. I've always said that I kind of believe, and I'm not the only one that has said these things. I believe similar to what Jeffrey Sachs says, a couple other people, that if you continue to claim that someone's the enemy, you will turn them into your enemy. And that's, I feel, we've created this sort of boogeyman. just to justify our own narrative and our own global expansions and our own rather large misdeeds as well. And we are still selling that narrative to this day. Meanwhile, the buffer states that we were talking about, Poland, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, Ukraine, they still play the same role. Same thing. They're staging grounds for U.S. money, weapons, bases. And the Americans are pretty much footing the bill. And I can tell you this. I mean, that's not so much true anymore. Trump has been pushing that, and we'll get into that in just a minute. But as a former military person, I honestly, and in some parts never really did, but honestly, I still don't get the point. I have never seen, nor has anyone presented to me, any evidence that Russia or the Soviet Union, frankly, were planning to take over the world in 1949 or today. I don't believe it. And I believe the approach is off, and it always has been. In our approach, I think the world approach needs to be different. The approach to the world has got to be different. It's not, and we'll get to that here in a second too. But I believe that Trump gets that to some extent. Trump wants to run the world as like a global CEO. And he might not dress it up in polished language, but I think his instincts is right. NATO is a drain on the United States, built on fear that doesn't really exist. It bleeds America dry while feeding us and the people that suck the money away. They're feeding us this fairy tale that we have a huge villain out there. A couple of them. We have Vladimir Putin and we have China. That's what we got. So let's dig into this, because here I am in Vilnius. The history screams it at you from every corner. You see it everywhere. There's Ukrainian flags all over the damn place. There's signs on their buses as they go down the road to say Vilnius, heart, Ukraina, Ukraine. And I mean, it's just screaming at you from everywhere. They're giving free stuff to Ukrainians. I could tell you some stories, but that's not the point of the show. Well, my shows are always about telling you stories. But let's dig into this, because, like I said, it's grudges, the grudges in the history. The grudges have never healed. None of these. And they've been going on for centuries between the Poles, the Ukrainians, the Latvians, the Lithuanians, the anybody, pick it, the Germans, the Habsburgs, the Austrians, the Turkish, the Tatars, the Mongolian hordes, the Ottoman Empire. I mean, Austria-Hungary, you could go on forever, and the history, you'll never get past it. So America doesn't have that history. I mean, we have a history where we destroyed the roaming tribes from before, but they didn't know what hit them. We took over all of that in pretty much no time. And not that I say it's the right thing to do, but we don't have that kind of tribal history. If we had the history anything like what they have in Europe, trust me, Americans would think differently too. Okay, but we don't. We always think it's somewhat innocence and naivete, and it's somewhat stupidity, because nobody looks into it, and nor do they bother to understand in the way they should. And we can't understand it the way the Europeans understand it. But let me tell you this. The borders all over Europe have changed hundreds of times. Hundreds of times. Will they hold? Borders never hold. And the idea the American can fix all of this, or that territorial integrity is what it's all about, is arrogance and stupidity. It's not wisdom, not remotely. NATO was not built about peace. It was built about control. And 75 years later, here we are, still paying for the same old lies that started then. NATO is a U.S. control tool, not a shield. The USSR wanted security, not conquest, which I believe is the exact same thing that Russia wants, security, not conquest. Buffer state then equals a buffer state now, and now there aren't any. Because NATO, we lie, and we just continue to expand. And I had a whole show on that the other day. Let's talk about the soldier perspective, training for wars that never came. Well, you train. Sooner or later, somebody's going to create a war for you. And America's pretty good about that. We create them. So I think Trump's instinct to scale back NATO is pretty much common sense. All right. And in order to bring that to you tonight, I want to tell you about a little bit of a history lesson. And let's, since we're in Vilnius, we're going to use Lithuania as an example, the example for tonight, because Lithuania first was mentioned in something called the Kedlingberg Annals in 1009 AD. Okay? It's when the state or the country or the tribe, whatever you want to call it, of Lithuanians was mentioned. It was 1009 AD. So no Lithuania prior to that, never existed. Wandering tribes, there they go. Next mention, 1253 AD. Guy named Mindaugas, if I've said that correctly, is crowned. And then pretty much instantly assassinated, killed. So that was the second, you know, the next sort of historic mention. In the 1300s, 1316 to 1341, the Gediminas made Vilnius the capital. Okay, so Vilnius is the capital of a group of people formed together, calling themselves Lithuania. Okay, in 1385 to 1430, so a full 100 years almost. Guy named Jogaila and Vytautas, and these names, I'm not going to get any of them right, so just have to live with that part. But I saw the places where this empire was based, basically. The Lithuanian Empire was a union. They made a union with Poland, which was huge. They were Christianized, became Christian, in other words, by 1430. Is kind of to placate Poland. And in the 1500s, there were wars. They talked about wars with Moscow, Renaissance palaces, first statutes and retaining their independence, but they were still linked heavily with Poland, right? And, you know, this went on. Borders were lost. There were battles with Moscow, battles with Ukraine, battles with the people calling themselves the Belarusians, battles from the Polish coming one way or the other, battles from Germans, battles from the south, the Tatars, the Ottoman Empire, people coming up from that pathway. They were overrun back and forth. And if you see the maps, or, you know, if you can go back and look at them, go look at a history of Lithuanian territory maps, and I'm using Lithuania as the example, but you can basically do this for every country, including Russia. And you can do it. Every century has been the same old story. Every single one. Invasion, betrayal, shifting borders. NATO didn't exist and couldn't have prevented it if they did, but it didn't erase any of that. And I'm telling you, people remember it. People remember these kind of things. And they remember, they have like a, I like to think there's kind of like a, national memory as well, right? Where people have a bit of a history that they remember, or a national, we don't like the Poles, which before Russia became the bad guy, the Poles were the bad guys, because, you know, otherwise, why would you need to join them? Why did you need to join with Austria-Hungary, in which a lot of the marriages, a lot of the history that I reviewed today in some of these places, the marriages going back and forth to seal treaties with large families, and how a lot of these leaders in the Lithuanian-Polish empire were kept it for as long as they did, right? Every century, remember, back and forth, gained territories, lost territories, war with Russia, war with Moscow has been a constant theme in those years, way before World War I, World War II. These things have been going on for centuries, okay? So, and today I went to Vilnius Museums, and I want to talk about some of the modern parallels that we got. And I want to tell you a little bit about Vilnius as a little bit separate, and then get back to the NATO myths and the NATO scars, because some of this stuff is important too. And the reason I'm going to share it with you is to give you an entire story of Vilnius and what I noticed today. Today happened to be Free Museum Day in Vilnius. I didn't know this, and it was free. You could get into any of the museums in Vilnius, and there are plenty of them. So apparently the last Sunday of every month, Free Museum Day. Today was Sunday. Free museums. Bless you. It was great. Didn't have to pay. But these museums all capture the contradictions of European indulgence on one side, courage on the other. So indulgence is certainly Vilnius is indulgence. We'll get to that. And very interesting, very, you know, beautiful, lots of beautiful architecture, beautiful buildings, beautiful things that are built to last for a very long time. And it was really quite the visit today, and I don't have time to go into all of that for this show, and I actually have a point to get to. And but the first museum I went to was a museum on communication, and it went from postcards, letters, telegraphs, telephones, computers, WhatsApp, you know, and on and on and on. Wish you were here to you are here. You know what I mean? And you, now it's everybody's taking a photo. In fact, part of me thinks that the photo and the sharing on Instagram or Facebook or whatever the hell it is that you use is far more important than the history that you're supposed, or the site that you're seeing at the place that you're seeing it at. I went to a church today that was built ages and ages ago. And when I went in, it was very reverent, right? They have a huge pipe organ in there. And this pipe organ, there was, you know, it was obviously electrified. There wasn't somebody playing it. It was connected to something that was playing music. And there was all this general music, people sitting in the pews, you know, crossing themselves, or take, you know, there were people also, tourist mode like me, going in and taking pictures of this centuries-old church, been around forever. Well, all of a sudden, a song started playing that was the same stuff that you would hear in an American haunted house movie. And I'm going to upload it to my channel. I filmed it. I was like, I can't believe this. It was completely irreverent. And it was like you would play in an old haunted house movie. And imagine Herman Munster. You know, here you got this this church with all these 800-year-old paintings and carvings and everything everywhere. People there worshiping. And all of a sudden, Enter the Haunted House music from an old American movie. It was crazy. And I was like, geez, I guess they really do think differently than we do. And I filmed it just because it was odd. And so I could have proof. It's like, these people are nuts. And clearly we think differently than each other when you're playing haunted house music. But maybe that music means something else in Lithuania, apparently so. So that was stop number one and two, you know, the communication and then this church. And then came some kind of a weird sensuality and sex exhibit. Okay, and this was nothing but several rooms of photos. It was a photo exhibit. And so each photo was somebody in varying stages of undress. You know, there were a couple of penises showing, plenty of breasts showing. And then the alleged artist, who is the, and for me, this wasn't really for me. I don't mean to beat up on it too much, but geez, you know, I'll get to the point of why. And people think differently is the point of everything I'm telling you here, and why. Plus, it just maybe give you a little spirit of Vilnius. I generally like it, but I don't know. People are a little bit, you know, they're not as nice as in other places. They were nicer in Belarus, far nicer in Russia, you know. But here, they're a little bit not, a little bit on the odd side, I think. In this sensuality exhibit, my verdict on that, juvenile. People posting nude photos of themselves, little essays about their personal philosophy of sensuality. I suppose you could call that art if you like. I call it, I don't know, self-display. Here's my wiener and, you know, hope you like it. And, you know, you can call that art, I suppose. They want to dress it as culture. I call it a waste of 45 minutes. Yeah. But, okay, teach their own. I don't really give a rip. I just think it was, you know, for me, I'm glad I didn't have to pay for it. Let's put it that way. The third stop really did matter to me. I thought it was kind of cool. And this was something they called, and remember, this is conflict. This is, they call it Soviet resistance art. Showed a full display, several rooms, a whole floor, maybe, however it was, that Soviet resistance art. Artists that worked under censorship, smuggling, you know, freedom, free thought into their own brushstrokes. I suppose it was a little bit of courage. I suppose it was some art, and it was, you know, some meaning and something different and resistance, if you want to call it that. Because remember, Lithuanians back in the, especially the 50s, and they were being sent to Siberia. You know, there were, Stalin was doing some evil things to control the people, you know. And while I'm standing there, you know, my phone went ding, and I got a text notification, well, an alert on my phone, some of the news that comes up. I get alerted when international things pop up. And this one happened to be an article that I initially didn't look much at, but then I did. And it was about President Zelensky vowing deep strikes inside of Russia in retaliation for Russia continuing, you know, not, you know, capitulating as he wants them to, and to get out of it. So I'm sitting there. So Zelensky is now upping the ante, and they're trying to get the U.S. and West and the rest of Europe involved in a war with Russia. You know, that's his end game. He wants full scale NATO war with Russia. That's what he wants. And he wants, the only way he's ever going to get Russia to capitulate is if he can convince everybody to this. Now, Lithuania is very much behind the experiment that is Ukraine. And from my point of view, that's not going to change. I still think they're incorrect in that. And they need to look at their own history. You know, I think they're channeling the 1415, 1600s when they were still back and forth with Russia, or they're channeling this art stuff of people being sent to gulags in Russia by Stalin. And these are things we're never going to overcome. We Americans have nothing to do with this, and we never should have. NATO isn't going to stop this, okay? And certainly not American NATO. We have nothing to do with this, and you're never going to get rid of it. Remember, think about this. Here's Zelensky calling out his new Flamingo missile, a 3,000-kilometer weapon that can hit Moscow, St. Petersburg, further, and now he's committing to using it. He's saying he's going to use it. He doesn't care about Trump. He doesn't care about Western Europe. I believe it was Germany that helped him fund creating these things. Russia's, meanwhile, bombing the hell out of anything military, anything infrastructure. The rest of the world is saying, oh, geez, they're killing people. Yep, it's a war. And it has nothing to do with America. Zip. Zip, zip, zip. And it has nothing to do, frankly, with NATO. If all of Europe wants to get together and go against Russia, fine. But Russia, America has nothing to do with it and should not have anything to do with it. So here, think about it. NATO calls itself a defensive organization. Here is its new proxy, its new, poster child, openly threatening Moscow. You call that defense? That is escalation, friends and neighbors. It is escalation. Meanwhile, Putin's not even in Moscow. Where is he? He's in Beijing. He's standing right next to Xi Jinping and Prime Minister Modi from India and commemorating Victory Day. Remember, same thing, World War II. Also included the axis of Japan against China. And how many people did China lose? Let's not forget this. China lost over 20 million people in World War II. The war wasn't only Europe's fight. It was a world war. And it was from Warsaw to Wuhan. So picture this. Vilnius resistance art on one side. Zelensky threatening Moscow on the other. Ukrainian flags flying all over Lithuania. And, talking about resistance art, talking about anti-Russia this. There are still people here who don't want to speak to you in Russian. They won't do it, even though they do. If you speak to them in Russian, they answer you in English. And that happened to me several times today. And I suppose that's some sort of resistance, huh? And but what would they do if I didn't speak English? I don't know. It's this war. This war, Ukraine has nothing to do with America. Vilnius has nothing to do with America. I don't want to say we don't give a rip, but we don't give a rip. We just don't care. That's your own war. Why should America care? Why should we care about your wars that have been going on for 1,000 years? You push back and forth, Poland this, Poland that, Poland, Ukraine. The Polish still hate the Ukrainians because of Bandera and the killing of 120, 110,000, however many it was, Polish. In fact, they still want to exhume their bodies and bring them back to Poland. I don't see the point of that, but I suppose I get it. If you're not going to get Lvov back, or Lviv, whichever they're calling it these days, you might want to get the bodies back. But I think that's probably a bit much. But okay, fine. I think that's a political stunt, is what I probably should say. So NATO sits there pretending it's keeping the peace when all it does is tying America to old grudges that nobody's ever going to resolve, and new escalations that could burn the world. I mean, these old grudges involve places like Serbia, Czechoslovakia, Bratislava, you know, all are Bratislava, whatever the name of that city is. And this is not for America, and it should not be. Okay, now let's go a little bit further into this and make sure that I bring into this a little bit about a reality that is building as well. And last night's show, I went into all about this multipolar reality, which is on display in a victory day in China with Xi Jinping, Vladimir Putin, Mr. Modi from India, and NATO is still, I mean, Jesus, NATO is not together. America is not together with NATO. Most Americans, you know, a lot of Americans are still on board with this, with, hey, Russia's our enemy too, which they're just incorrect in that. And I wanted to point out a couple of cultural things that occurred to me on my little trip here in the last few days. And I want to tell you some great things. I did a show the other night about how art, how culture, how all of these things that bring us together, sometimes over centuries, are things that we should be focusing on, not things that divide us, but on things that bring us together. And I'm going to tell you a little story here. So I took a train from Moscow to Minsk on the way out of Russia, just like I did on the way into Russia. I got creative on the trip and figuring out how to get into Russia. It was sanctions, it's a pain in the ass, but well worth a visit, and I'm very glad I went and all of that. But on the way back, we're coming through wherever we were. We might have been somewhere by Smolensk, I don't remember, but the person sitting next to me got off the train, so I had an empty seat next to me. So for two stops, I had an empty seat. And it was before the Russian border, the train stopped, and a lot of people got on. And a guy gets on the train next to me, Russian guy, and drunk as he was, wasted. His eyes were all glassy. He couldn't put a word together, and he's a little on the happy side, let's call it. Good thing he was generally a happy drunk. He got depressed a little while later, but he was happy when he sat down. And he sits down next to me, says a few words to me, asks me a question. I don't remember what the nature of it was. Had something to do with his suitcase that he was putting over my head on the rack. And I said something back to him. We chatted for a minute or two. He goes, where are you from? What are you, you know, he noticed my accent. And I said, I'm an American. And he goes, an American, really loud. And the whole train car was listening and was looking at us. And for the next half hour, at least, he was on a tear. You American, tell me what you think of this. You American, what do you think of Trump? You American, we're going to come and bomb you. We're going to take you out. And he was, you know, talking about something. I said, I have nothing to do with any of that. He goes, what are you doing in our country? Why are you here? And I had said that I was there to, for travel, to visit. I liked Russia and blah, blah, blah. And he goes, you're Jewish. And I said, well, I'm not. And he goes, you know how you can tell a person's a Jew? And I said, no. And he said it, and I don't get it to this day. If anybody's listening and does get it, this day, it was only a couple of days ago, but he goes, well, let me sniff behind your ears. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah, sniffing behind my ears. I have no idea what you're talking about. Not a clue what the reference was. But I was getting a little pissy with the guy. And, but, you know, I don't want to create an international incident. You know, you get stuck by a drunk guy and, you know, whole train car is listening. There's a little kid across the way, a little kid, probably 17, 19, who knows. And he was definitely paying attention and he was staring in and he was very interested in hearing this American story. And his mother, or whoever she was sitting next to him, was saying to the guy, listen, you're ruining the reputation of Russians and Belarusians and we, you know, behave yourself, basically. So ultimately, you know, we shared some stories, wanted to know, you know, and I was keeping it light, trying to keep it funny and trying to, you know, I tried to quit talking to him a few times, but he kept on talking. And then he says, well, let me, and he was drunk, so I was all for this, but he goes, let me buy you some tea. And I was like, you know, that's fine. You know, he goes, do you want some tea? I really didn't want any tea, but he said, let me buy some tea. I couldn't buy anything. I couldn't get any internet. And so and they wouldn't take my Russian card, and so I couldn't get any internet, so I couldn't pay. So I wasn't going to buy anything. And he bought some tea for both of us. Tea came, we started drinking it, and he goes, and he gave 20 Belarusian rubles, which is far too much to pay for the tea. But he told the girl to keep it. And then 10 minutes later, he was saying to me, he goes, they took my money and they didn't give it back. I want my money. And, they didn't give it back. And then he says to me, why don't you go talk to the whatever his name, you know, the steward, I guess he was. Why don't you go talk to the steward and see what he will say, you know? And I was like, and I had to add tea. So I went up and I talked to the guy. I said, look, the guy wants his 20 rubles back. And I said, I heard what he told the girl. He told her to keep it. And, you know, if you want, I said, I'll tell you what, why don't you tell me what I owe and you come and pay for it. Give the guy his money back or whatever it is you're going to do. He goes, are you getting tired of sitting by him? I said, well, no, I just don't want there to be any issues. I don't want there to be any problems. And, I happen to have gotten stuck by a drunk guy. I suppose that happens sometimes. And, you know, I'd prefer that it didn't. But here we are. So he came up and he chewed the guy out and told him he was being neprilichny, which is basically rude and uncivilized. You're not being nice. And you can't. Buy somebody tea and then take it back or whatever it was he said. He let him have it. And a couple of people in the car were like, rightly so. And he was like, he didn't understand it. Didn't seem to me. But either way, I told the steward I couldn't pay until we got to a spot where I could get some internet. Took care of that. Paid him later. It wasn't anything anyway. It was a small amount of money. And at any rate, I just wanted to avoid any sort of incident. Well, the guy was kind of, because people had, you know, yelled at him. I don't think he really understood what was going on. Elliot was drunk. And he, I don't know if I handled it correctly or not. God knows. But the guy got very quiet after that. He actually went to sleep for a little while. And I was pretty happy. But he was jumping on me about this conflict and talking about a perception that Americans started this war, at least from the Russian side, and that Americans are the ones they are at war with. Now, I happen to believe that to be pretty much correct. You know, I believe that. I think we are much more to blame for this than Russia is. I think we are. We pushed this. I think Europe is still pushing it. I think, and if you look at the perspective from the Lithuania side, Jesus, these people are all, they are truly concerned. I don't believe this is made up. They think this is the next level. I believe they really believe that Putin's coming. Putin ain't coming. You know, I think it's foolish and stupid. And whoever is pumping this stuff up their heads is the same people who is funding bullshit in NATO and in the European Union. And by the way, helping people steal money from another generation of regular people all over Europe. So those are my opinions. These are not government opinions, but I'm telling you, the Lithuanians really do believe that Russia's coming. It's coming for them. They're flying these Ukrainian flags for a reason. This is nuts. But they believe it. You know, I don't believe it. I think the world's changed, and I think people need to change with it. Change their damn perspectives, because what you're doing is creating, seeding hate and other sorts of things that are no longer relevant. They certainly aren't relevant now. And your grudges from a Polish incursion and a Russian or a Moscow incursion 400 years ago, or any of those things, don't mean that's the same thing that's going to happen tomorrow. But I suppose from their perspective, you better be prepared for it. But from our perspective, what the freak does America have to do with it? We don't need to be the world's policeman. I'm with Trump on that one. I think he's trying to get back from being the world policeman. You know, I think he'd like to be the world peacemaker. But he keeps going back and forth too. So I think he still has a lot of neocon, which is naturally globalist bullshit. They want the same thing. You know, they want to continue these wars. They want to continue funding it. But I don't think they're going to be successful in the Xi Jinping, Putin, and Modi modes. That's not going to work. So let's talk about the economics of it all, because this is where it slips a little bit. Remember, this is still a money game. This is the money game. Rubles and rubles and rubles and rupees, rubles and yuan. Sanctions were supposed to crush Russia. Sanctions were supposed to harm China and harm India. They didn't. The Russian economy is standing. And I'm telling you, I felt like Russia was America in the 80s. Everything is cooking over there. There's money all over the place. You know, there's a lot of poor people too, but there's plenty of money to go around. I didn't see, you know, certainly not in Moscow, didn't see a lot of, I saw a lot of money. Let's put it that way. Restaurants are fantastic. There's money being spent, and it's a big one. The roads are decent. It is not Moscow of the 90s. Not anymore. Nope, nope, nope. The subway systems were fantastic. I think the BRICS is a big deal. As we get into that, the world isn't the world of Europe pre-World War II. It's not that way. And I think the focus on creating a boogeyman needs to go away. And I think that people are still creating this boogeyman, certainly in Lithuania. They believe the boogeyman is still in the East. And they are totally on board. As a people, they are totally on board with the bullshit going on in Ukraine and with everybody funding it. And oh, there was a drone thing I saw. There was a couple walking down the street holding hands, young kids. wearing black shirts that on the back said drone training. And I saw something while waiting for the train the other day, or outside of the train station in here in Lithuania. And it was an advertisement board, you know, one that changes every couple of minutes, different advertisement, TV board, basically. And on it, it said, we're gathering money, $1 million or whatever it is, €2 million to buy drones for Ukraine. And this couple was wearing this drone production shirt. So people here are going to places, funding, buying, putting together drones and sending them to Ukraine in their spare time. Or maybe it's their job, but it was a husband and wife holding them. They had the same advertising shirts that I saw on that board. And when I took a picture of it, because here they don't put a lot of stuff in Russian. Remember, they don't want to speak Russian to you. They will try not to speak Russian to you. And they will speak English to you if they think you speak English, or they'll start with English as the default. And I don't know. I think it's a little bit rude. That's what I think. But that is what is going on. And these guys are all in. Whatever advertisement is being sold that Russia's the big bad wolf, they're buying here. That is for sure. Tell you what, the hostility towards Russia is not buried remotely. It is spoken about openly. It's how people remember. Maybe it's recent deportations, Siberia, Soviet years. Russia will always be the Soviet oppressor. And it could be a generational thing, but it sure as hell is not gone. I don't think people think that Germany's ever going to attack them. How did Germany become so friendly? I mean, they're the ones who produced Hitler. They're the ones who came and overran Latvia, Lithuania, and all the Baltics. It was all Germany. But nope, who's the bad guy? Russia. Russia, Russia, Russia. And who created that? I mean, Jesus, when's the last? Now, admittedly, when the Soviets marched all the way to Berlin, they didn't really leave. You know, they didn't do it. I read a plaque today that says that in 1991, when Lithuania was trying to get out of the Soviet Union, there were journalists broadcasting, and I saw an ad that said they were broadcasting from this point. We still spoke, and we've had our independence. And these grudges are not old. They're new. Now, one other thing I wanted to talk to you about is Lithuania is shrinking. Its youth are leaving. People aren't staying here. It's an older nation. And one thing, and Russia's going through the same thing. Ukraine, I mean, hell, they're left in mass, you know, and a lot of people are leaving anyway. They're going to cheaper places with more social free stuff. That's where they're going, where they don't have to work, where they don't have to get anything. But demographics are a big deal. You get, here as well, you get a family stipend. You get, imagine living in America and having a baby. And being told, because you had a baby, we're going to pay you $600 a month to help raise that baby. And we're going to do that for every kid that you have. So here you are planning on having one kid. But raising kids are expensive. So if the government says, we're going to give you another $600 a month per kid, Jesus, there's some big families going on, right? And people are starting to make some money based on all that stuff. And Russia's doing it. A lot of other places are doing it because they're having negative growth. Their families are shrinking. You can't afford kids. And so what's the government doing? They're going, Jesus, what are we going to do in the future? We've got to increase. And so they are. They're increasing them. And Europe is aging, hollowing out. Russia's shrinking also. NATO's defending lands that are emptying themselves. We've got lots of places with a lot of problems, is what I'm thinking. And I want to kind of tie all this together for you and say that I've had quite an eventful week-long journey into Russia. And then whatever days remember are coming through on the way back. And this, my first time in Lithuania, my first experience in it. Yesterday, my impressions were really not that good of Lithuania. Today, walking along the river, which was really cool. It's a Sunday. There were people out bicycling. There's a lot of bicycling that goes along here. Evidence of last night's partying. This place is a lot like Europe, maybe still is, or it certainly was in my army years. If you were going to go out after work when I was in the army in Germany, you didn't go out right after work. People weren't out then. Places were empty. You went out, you went home. Did what you were going to do. You know, you get out of your work environment at 4 or 5 o'clock, whatever, 6 o'clock, and you go home. People don't go out until 11, midnight. But these people party all night long. These people don't go home. Even in Lithuania now, hello, Belarus was crazy. It's at 8 o'clock in the morning. I went out to breakfast, and there were people still partying in bars, walking outside of bars with big glasses of beer and hanging out in the street and drinking them. The sun was already up, and they'd been partying since 11 p.m. And this is what socialism will do for you, baby. You don't have to work. You can. America, we shut down. I mean, Jesus, we shut down when they're just getting started. And places are shut down by 1 o'clock in most states. Sometimes it's 2. I can't remember. I've been to a couple states where it's 3 or 4 in the morning, but never 7 or 8. These places are open 24 hours, you know what I mean? Or they shut down at 7, 8 in the morning and open back up again at 10, 11 at night. And there's didn't seem to be any shortage of them. You know, so culturally, we are very, very different. And their youth, I don't know, they have time to have any babies. They're all out partying all night long. And I tell you what, that it is certainly different here. It is, you know, the same was in Belarus, the same. And, you know, I've seen it in a couple other places over the years, but it was definitely interesting. This morning, went to breakfast at a pretty nice place, and I like to talk about food because I like food too, but let's talk about culture here. Here, everyone is basically Slavic as well. You know, I suppose you could, European and Slavic, there's plenty of Slavic types, let's say, plenty of Russian speakers. And Lithuanians, I'm not so sure, Slavic, but they're certainly connected to the, but they're also from the Habsburgs, and especially on the aristocracy side, and all the, watching the genealogies of some of that, there's some serious history here. And the reason for this whole show and talking to you about history is talking about the scars that are here. And these scars are all over Europe. And we're not going to cure them, America. We aren't going to cure them. And we Americans have no business being involved in land wars in Europe. None. This isn't Adolf Hitler. This isn't any sort of incursion like they want to say it is. It's these things have been lined out over and over and over. If you truly believe that Russia wants to take over the world, you're just wrong. You're listening to the wrong experts. There is zero evidence that Russia wants to take over the world. I think Russia's been clear about what they're pointing out and what they're doing. This is true even if you're in Lithuania. Where is the evidence that Russia's going to take over here? I suppose it's a pretty fresh 1991 when you declare your independence. The Soviets, it was still the Soviet Union at that time when the Soviets come and try to crush you and put you back in line. It didn't work, but I understand that. It was a country in upheaval. It was a country that was going down. And so I get the fact that history is still got a lot of history, but as Americans, as an American, as an American patriot, as a former American soldier, diplomat, had a diplomatic passport, I'm telling you, I don't believe that the experts have any idea what they're talking about if they're pumping out that Vladimir Putin plans to take over the world or take over Europe or march upon Paris or even march upon Vilnius. I don't believe it. And I can't imagine that people in Vilnius really believe it either. But surprisingly, after meeting several of them and hearing some of the things that they say, I must admit to being surprised, because everything that they're talking about, Ukrainian flags flying everywhere, and they're in. They are all in into, I wonder if that means they'd go to war. Jesus, if they're all in, why don't they go join in the war in Ukraine and go fight Russians? I mean, if that's what you want to do, go do it. You know, what are you waiting for NATO to do something? You go do something. If you really believe that, go fight. Go fight and put your money where your mouth is. I mean, hell, they're paying people $5,000 a month to fight on the Ukrainian side, too. You know, you can go be a mercenary if you want to. They'll hire you. They'll put you out on the front lines. Go grab a weapon and stand a post. Go get out there. Do it if you feel that strongly about it. And it looks like most of them do. Jesus, the amount of Ukrainian flags here is astronomical. They're everywhere. And hell, I saw more Ukrainian flags than I saw Lithuanian flags. And it's a little bit nutty. There you have it. They are definitely all in. And so I wanted to talk about that, but I also want to tell you about my the food here. Food here has been pretty damn good. And I had something this morning, and I really had a hard time choosing. I wish I could remember the name of the place, because I would give it a little ping and say where it was. Most people that I speak to in my Mid-Missouri radio show aren't really world travelers, but if you do get to Lithuania and you get to Vilnius on a Sunday morning, there was a good brunch space near the central church area in the center of town, and lots of shops open up. They don't open till 10 at the earliest, and most of them later. But great place to have a cool menu and a cool breakfast. And this breakfast was called a villager's plate. And it was similar to our skillet hash, or whatever you would call it in America, where you put potatoes on the bottom of your skillet. You crack in a few eggs. You throw in some, maybe some mushrooms and some tomatoes, and some, I don't know, whatever else that you cook on top. And there was some sausage in mine. Very damn tasty. And I had some blini, and I had some, what do they call them? Draniki? I think they're the draniki, but I can't remember. And those, the draniki are basically little cottage cheese pancakes. Pretty freaking good. So, ever get a chance, get it. Try some of those, or blini especially. You know, if you have a good made blini, very good stuff. The food is very similar to what you can find in Russia and Belarus and places like that, and very well made, and certainly worthy of eating and worthy of comment. What other interesting museums did I get to today? Because there were just a couple that I wanted to get to. But my main point was talking about the scars that are very visible today that have been left over from generations of conflict, generations of war, generations of cultures beating up upon each other. I'd like to think that's going to change. You know, people are just people, and who the hell cares on what side of what border you are on? It still seems like the same old crap. We're still creating wars that might not necessarily exist. And that's bad stuff. NATO was born out of fear, with the help of America and Great Britain. But it wasn't born out of truth. That's not for sure. It's certainly true. There ain't no way that Stalin, even being the boogeyman that he was personally, there ain't no way he could have put together an army to take over Paris. The deal that they made between the Allies to kind of swap things and split things as they did was a necessary deal on those sides. I remember reading a couple of historical briefs about the fact that after Russia, Britain, and England took out Berlin and finished it, that there was a lot of regret on the sides of the U.S. and England that they didn't push all the way and take out Russia or the Soviet Union at the same time, or at least attempt to. I don't think there's any way we could have either. And anybody who thinks we could have doesn't understand Russians either. And Stalin was definitely in charge there. And he really was I don't want to say evil, but he was definitely a harsh man. And evil, I wasn't there, I didn't live through it, couldn't tell you. But I believe that he was a bad person, but he changed Russia, that is for sure. He changed the Soviet Union, definitely. And look at the world today. Look at the world today. Today, we're talking about who's the one leveling threats. Who's threatening? Zelensky. He's threatening. He's threatening missiles on Moscow. Meanwhile, Russia, China, India, they're standing together with people like Iran, United Arab Emirates. There's people from the BRICS side that they're talking over all over the Shanghai Cooperation Council, their organization, it's called SCOS. I can't remember what that organization is, but it's the entire Southeast Asia that they're talking about. And it's an important organization. And they're talking about cooperation. And they have their border disputes. They have their own problems. But they're all looking economically. I'm not so sure that that's what's going on in Europe. I really am not. And, you know, meanwhile, we're all talking about, geez, here comes, not we, but a lot of Americans are in the same boat. And they're all talking about big bad Russia coming to take over the world, China coming to take over the world. When has China ever made any incursions to take over the world? Seriously. How many wars have we started, America? And then find any that China has started. Find any. You know, if they had global domination efforts, don't you think they'd be carrying them out? Maybe we should be fearful that Russia, India, China, the big three, all together on the same stage with the U.S. out in the cheap seats and no longer relevant is a bad deal. Regionally, does it matter? Regionally, does Europe matter to America? Regionally, why aren't we focused on working better with Canada and with Mexico? And I told you in the show last night about any of these infrastructure projects, nothing regional. But these guys are creating regional power. Tell you what, I don't want to go back to last night's show, but this is a big deal. And remember, they're commemorating millions of dead Chinese at the hands of Japan. That's what they're commemorating. And Lithuania is remembering deportation. They're remembering centuries-old wars. Remember, Poland is remembering massacres by Ukrainians. And but Poland is also very much anti-Russia. And none of them are ever forgetting. They think Russia today is the same as Russia was 400 or 500 years ago, and they're never going to stop. And that's how it is. These wounds are old. They are deep. And America cannot heal them. America can't heal those wars. But here we are, chained to NATO anyway. Is NATO going to solve those scars? I don't think so. In fact, they're trying to pump them up and use those scars to make everyone create the boogeyman in Vladimir Putin and Russia and keep us, America, chained to that dispute that has nothing to do with us. If Ursula von der Leyen wants to fight Russia, let her figure it out. If Merz wants to get together with Macron and company and take his coalition of the willing and help Ukraine bomb the crap out of Russia, that's what they've done anyway, because who provided the technology? Germany, for Ukraine to make their own ballistic missiles, you know. And why do you think Russia's been trying to bomb those places where they're being made? Some people say they were delivered by Germany. I don't know that I believe that if Ukraine says they're building them, but Russia's been bombing the crap out of them. There was a lot of here about that. But as Americans, think about it. Do we want to keep paying the bill, keep fighting wars we cannot win, by the way, and keep on always pretending that Russia is the bad guy? Or do we finally say no and step away from all of that? Quit engaging. Quit. Increasing the ability of Ukraine to provide resistance. Quit providing weapons. Stop providing money. Did you see the short fall article on how much money von der Leyen was talking about. They got huge shortfalls on money in Ukraine. Huge shortfalls. We need to pay for Ukraine. Really? Do we need to pay for Ukraine? That they're trying to get Trump and company. And there'll be Lindsey Graham with a new bill to send over and say, we need to give some money to Ukraine. Sliding some of it into his own pocket, by the way. And for his reelection campaign. Wonder what the people of his own state have to say about that, if they know anything about any of the crap that he's got going on. Here they are, Chinese, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, right? He says, Xi Jinping says, this is global stability, right? 20 heads of state, 20. Now, this is a big deal. 20 heads of state and 10 international organizations are all attending. This is a big deal, just like BRICS was last year, with the number of people, the summit, which is ending tomorrow, Monday. Ukraine, Israel, Gaza, escalating trade disputes with Donald Trump's terrorist policies. The summit is going to talk about Asian regional security and economic cooperation and cultural ties, and talk about transportation, energy, digitization, AI, and green development. That's what they're doing. I mean, they're talking infrastructure, they're talking projects. And on Tuesday, Putin is traveling to Beijing to talk with Xi on trade, security, Ukraine, and the U.S. Next day, he's going to go to the 80th anniversary of Japan's surrender in World War II. And he's supposed to have 10 bilateral meetings with leaders like Narendra Modi, Recep Erdogan from Turkey, and Mossad Pezeshkian from Iran. There's a lot going on. And everybody in Lithuania is all up in arms about Ukraine. Ukraine is getting ready to bomb the crap out of stuff. But India and China have disputes. What have they done? They're setting aside these disputes about border issues. Again, they're keeping them to the sidelines and focusing on making economic decisions that impact their own countries. What's Europe doing? Worried about war. They're worried about Russia coming. That's what they're worried about. And I don't know. I think it's nonsense. Here's one from Trump haters. There's plenty of Trump haters for saying some of the things like I'm saying he needs to cut it out. Taking out the orange man, impeachment didn't stick. Is the Grim Reaper the new favorite candidate? It's an interesting article I read. It says, President Trump, is he on death's doorstep? That's the question that Trump haters have to ask. That's their last great hope to get rid of Donald Trump and go back to globalism and gay worship that everybody's hoping will come back to theaters near you. And I don't give a crap about gays. I mean, gays can do whatever they want. I don't care. I just don't think it should be gay worship, transgender worship. I don't care if you want to dress up like a woman, run around, pretend you're a woman if you're a guy. I don't care. It's your own affair. And just don't try to pump it down my throat like I need to, make sure my kids do the same thing. Nope, not interested. And I think most people aren't interested. If you want to do something like that, come over to the Bohemian capital of the world, which appears to be, from everything that I've read, Bohemian, and all the sex on display, and the artistic stuff. Apparently, this is one of the places it is known for, that kind of thing here in Vilnius, became kind of a hub of it. And the sexuality museum exhibit that I was telling you about earlier where everybody got to take a picture of their penis or their breasts and talk about how they're sexual and this is how life ought to be and you shouldn't be afraid of your sexuality and everybody likes sex. Well, these are things we already know. We already know these things. I don't care about your sexuality. I don't think I need to go see a picture of your penis to understand that people view sex in different ways. I don't care. I don't know why that one bothered me so much. I suppose it didn't bother me. It was a waste of my time. I was like, man. And I remember, thinking right when I came out, I was like, geez, I'm glad I didn't pay for that. That would have been a complete waste. But Trump haters are just waiting for Trump to die so that they can get back to business as usual. So social media, apparently, there's been a lot of attempts to determine if there are any signs of indicate serious medical conditions for Donald Trump. And they're talking about it on social media. Doctors believe that Trump has swollen legs, and that means he only has 7 months to live. He's going to have heart failure. That was public on the air tonight. TikTok in particular gave rise to a whole new category of content, which they call hopecore. And Trump haters give medical or medical adjacent experience in publishing content that opinions about Trump's days are numbered. Although how many days that means, nobody is becoming clear upon. They're just waiting for him to die. The uncertainty is a source of frustration for commentators seeking certainty and nailing down when he will die and how long they have to put up with him. So some are keeping spreadsheets, charts, countdown clocks, and same as you would keeping track of your stocks, I guess. But the White House openly commented on Trump's chronic vein insufficiencies that would explain bruising and swelling. But back in June, in his appearance at a UFC event, it led to much zooming in on the crotch area with some speculation that he was wearing a catheter. Crazy stuff. So why is this a thing? I don't know. People got nothing to talk about. And I just found it amusing and thought I would share it. I'm not so sure. There's going to be a lot to talk about this week. I am still a little bit on the disappointed end that nothing has come from the Alaska summit between Trump and Putin. I saw an article that said that Trump is pushing for a meeting between the two again and said that he'd be happy to do a trilateral meeting. The Germans are having protests against militarization. Russia has struck Ukrainian ports. I don't know. There's this, like I said, Kaya Kallas has talked about frozen Russian assets, funding, reparations to Ukraine. She's now pushing for that again. They want to steal Russia's money. I don't know. I hope you've enjoyed the program tonight. I did. I wanted to make sure that you understood that my point of all of this is that we are never going to end a dispute over here, and America does not need to be involved in anything having to do with war in Europe. Not now. It is not like it was 80 years ago. And I challenge you to look into and decide for yourselves. Use my words if you must, but also find out on your own. And travel is very enlightening. And you should do it if you can potentially figure it out. And it's not as expensive as you might think, especially if I'm doing it. You can listen to me at any time on internationalflavor.com. All of my old shows are out there. And you can Listen on damradio.com/live at 9 p.m. every night, Sunday through Thursday. And I hope that you do. You can always listen to others on that channel as well. damradio.com/live. Thank you very much for joining me this evening, and I hope that you have a very good and pleasant night.